Now, at this stage, I'll try to illustrate how Shakespeare could have been translated into music whilst the right musical language had been invented in the early 19th century, that was. And it begins with the very deep tap roots that lie under the surface of language and music, feeding and enriching both. Forgive me if I oversimplify in my search for clarity. Let's take Hamlet. Hamlet begins, "Who's there?" And if you see the play, you know that these words are spoken by the wrong sentry. Not the sentry who's on duty, but the sentry who's coming in to relieve him shouts, "Who's there?" And of course, the sentry on duty is rightly peeved by this. He says, "No, no, I'm the one supposed to be shouting, 'Who's there?' Nay, answer me, stand and unfold yourself," he says. Now this tells us, instantly, those words spoken by the wrong sentry as a piece of stagecraft tell us that something is amiss, something is wrong in the state of Denmark. And if you were playing the piano in a silent film, you would go like this. You would use a chord which has no key. You would say there's something wrong with the tonality of Denmark. That's what you would do. And it's what Beethoven does in his Romeo and Juliet tomb scene. Something's terribly wrong. Now, later in the same act, Hamlet has told that the ghost of his father is walking the night, and he wants to be absolutely sure that it is his father, naturally enough. So he says to Horatio, "His beard was grizzled." "No." And that's how Hamlet saw his dear old dad. Just an old chap with a sort of grizzled black and white beard. And if you were playing the piano for the silent film, you might go, "His beard was grizzled." No. And if you were Schumann, you would add the theme D, A, D, the theme of the father, in the bass. or even if you were Brahms. Okay? But Horatio cannot bear this description of the king. He says, in response to the question, "His beard was grizzled," he says, "It was, as I have seen it in his life, a sable silvered." That is to say, for him, what we're discussing is the majesty of buried Denmark. We have to speak in the lordly colours of heraldry. And so no music less than the Valhalla motif would do for that. Which also, as it happens, contains D-A-D flattened. Now, that's oversimplified, okay, but that's the heart of it. And this is music's equivalent for the dramatic or lyric symbol or image. It's a sort of Shakespearean undersong without words. And of course, its first public inventor was the 17-year-old Mendelssohn, already a great composer. By that time, that was 1826, it had become intellectually respectable to write such music, the music of ideas. What Beethoven had confided to a few friends could now be announced to the world at large without any embarrassment. Indeed, this was the direction that music was avowedly taking, if only in very general terms. Not even Mendelssohn ventured to specify the details, but I'll try to describe some of them to you as I hear them. Here's the overture to Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. It's how it begins, like this. Everyone loved that at the time. So we all still do to this day, but I shall venture to suggest that it hasn't been entirely understood. It means something. It's not just descriptive music or program music. It's like the Lied. Its symbolism and imagery are deep-rooted in the creative subconscious. What are those long, slow, bright chords? They surely mean the moonlight that shone into Mendelssohn's musical mind from the words of the play. Schlimm treffen wir beim Mondenlicht, du stolze Titania. Ill met by moonlight, proud Titania. German music lovers might well have heard that and recognized where that light came from. It's Haydn. Like a lot of the musical universe, it begins with the creation, appropriately enough, and it's where the moon was created. And as Haydn himself said, it has come from orbit. The illumination comes to us from above. His moon shines in long, sustained notes. Minims and Celibes, all those moons do. Like Debussy, Claire de Lune, or like Wolf, the Italian songbook. Der Mond. But Mendelssohn's is an even fuller moon, and it hangs overhead, absolutely audibly present, like a full moon in the sky. It fills the forest with light on the orchestra. Anyone can tell that who has ears to see. Or perhaps I should say eyes to hear. Since the moon actually looks like a semi-blue to any reasonable person. And you somehow want to sing it or play it whenever you see it. Now, this music, I'm sure, like the lead, it proceeds directly from the pages of a printed book. Mendelssohn, he must have read that whole play in the celebrated Schlegel and Keep translation. It had just appeared. And in that text, the word moon recurs like a musical motif, which is in effect what it is. It appears some 30 times all told, far more than in any other Shakespeare play. The young Mendelssohn reflects that light in sound. You can hear him presenting moonshine, that's what he's doing. And you can hear its associations with love and lovers. As you listen to those long woodwind chords in the orchestra, when they come back, you hear the harmonies changing in a rather strange, yet somehow familiar and evocative way. It suddenly goes rather like this. It's a very strange chord. But where have we heard it before? It's somehow familiar to our minds. It comes in Suave sia il vento, Così fan tutti. You hear the same key of E major, you hear the same harmonies, brightening and darkening as clouds trouble the moon, or sighs trouble the heart, or waves the surface of the sea. You hear that. And in the picture of feelings that Mozart paints for us, the music looks at a bright vision and it sees the dark side of it. And this is what Mendelssohn does, because it's about the same theme. It's about the parting of lovers and their sorrows. Deliberately foretold in chromatic discords, Mendelssohn knows that Midsummer Night's Dream is about the meeting and parting of pairs of lovers who interchange, as in Così fan tutti, but in his case, in the forest and under the moon. And that's what his music means and tells us deep down, past the descriptive level, going back to the deep roots shared by feeling and language.